Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this evening. Stick around as long as you can handle it tonight. We have the results of two international medical studies that I want to share with you early on the program here that are pretty scary. Pretty scary indeed. Also, John Conyers is planning an impeachment substitute hearing, which is a little astonishing. We'll cover some of that. Also, I want to share something with you tonight from, it's not all that long, it's excerpts from a speech made in 1978, I believe, by Jimmy Carter. Or was it 1979. You need to hear this. This is what Carter said 29 years ago. As a matter of fact, it was 29 years ago. We just missed it by 2 days. 29 years ago on July 15th. Hey, where do you hear this? Anyway, well, I watched some network news again tonight, being the kind of having some of these masochistic tendencies that I just can't seem to shake. Here's the message. It's all over. That's it. Good news tonight. According to both Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson and Betsy Stark and a whole clutch of network news, what's the word I want? Not journalists. Reporters? Okay, we'll go with reporters. According to all these people, good times, if not back, are right around the corner. And the proof? The proof? Well, oil is down $5 today. And as I think it was it Betsy Stark? Is she the economics reporter on, the one always sits across from Charlie Gibson on ABC and usually gives the bad news? But she had good news today. I think it was Betsy Stark. The $5 drop today in a barrel of oil, all the way down to what, right around $130 a barrel now. As Betsy said, that was the biggest single day's drop in history. Wow. If you take that $5 as a percentage of the price of a barrel of oil, though, Betsy, doesn't quite make it. Oh, well. Anyway, the other point that was made today or this evening by the network anchors and their clutch of reporters or whatever you want to call them is the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up another 200 points today. That means what, about 450 points up in the last 2 days. Wow. Now, control yourself. There's even more. Gasoline may soon come down to $3.95 a gallon. Huh? God. No. Sit down. I know you want to stand up and cheer, but there's more. New home construction permits in Houston, Texas are up by 30%. As a matter of fact, Charlie Gibson's news program did a whole segment, it was almost 2.5 minutes on the boom going on in Houston. Home construction permits are up by 30%. Of course, most of those are million-dollar homes, so it doesn't really affect the working class. They had a story of a guy who bought two Rolexes and then asked the jeweler to what? To see if he could get him another one. Million-dollar yachts are, we reported this the other night, million-dollar yachts, especially in Houston, are just off the chart. I mean, everybody, you like that term? Everybody's getting one in Houston. Now, of course, you know that the dominant industry in Houston is oil. And while the rest of us are suffering through all of this, the oil cartel in Houston, which is would like to be the oil cartel in Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia or wherever else the oil cartel nests, but they'll take Houston. They are doing just well, thank you. There are no problems. Kind of like the guy Dave who called me from Salt Lake City last night and said, hey, Malloy, yo, whoa, ain't nothing wrong with the economy. Not a thing. And by the way, you folks really were intrigued with old Dave. I got just a flood of emails, most of them not very nice to Dave, but... Oh, and some of you wrote to me and said, why wasn't I a little more, why didn't I give Dave a more space to talk? why did I just shout Dave down? Are you people serious? This is not a clown show, unless I am the clown. I hate clowns anyway. But when somebody comes on the program like that who purports to be in the credit card industry, that is the financial services industry, that is an industry that is murdering its clients and claims not to know who the Treasury Secretary is or the head of the Federal Reserve, it's time to say bye-bye. But just amazes me. So many folks email me, well, you know, Mike, I really like your program, and I agree with you 95% of the time, but you were a real son of a bitch last night to poor old Dave. Why didn't you spend some time educating him? All right, let me say this for the 9,000th time. This program is not about education. Never has been, never will be. There are programs on this network that are talk programs that if you listen closely, you will be educated. I don't do that. When I get a monkey who calls my program, I am going to play with him or her. And that sometimes requires jabbing and feinting, F-E-I-N-T-I-N-G, jabbing and feinting and making the monkey look like a total jackass. So please, in the future, gentle listener, don't send me emails asking me why I didn't show more patience with a jerk ball, okay? Because what I will probably do is ignore your email after thinking, God, these people are dumb, okay? And I hate to feel that way. I really do. I get an email from someone that starts out and says, I agree with you a lot. You know, you really make sense. But God, you were hard on Dave last night. I was hard on Dave last night? Jesus. But I digress. So the economy is fine, according to NBC and ABC. There is just absolutely nothing on the horizon. But good news, the Dow Jones up. Of course, how many stocks does the Dow Jones? Oh, never mind. Oil all the way down to $129 and change a barrel. Gasoline may come down to $3.95 a gallon. That's for regular, not diesel, pretty soon. New home construction permits in the $1 million-plus class are up 30% in Houston. Rolex watches are once again in demand. And let's not forget, million-dollar yachts. There now. Don't you feel better? Huh? Hot damn! All you folks that say, hey, Malloy, all you do is give us all that bad news on the radio every night. Don't you ever have any good... There you are. There's your good news. Are you sharing in that good news? Yeah? You're not. Well, anyway, Charlie Gibson was just gleeful. I thought he was going to squirm himself into some kind of an orgasm when he started the program tonight. Oh, good news. Oh, good news. Good economic news. Great economic news. Do they crack you up as much as they crack me up? All right, we have something has happened to a CNN reporter that we'll share with you here in a minute. And then these two, these healthcare studies are pretty scary. And a 1979 speech And I remember the speech by Jimmy Carter that the right-wing nutballs in this country immediately, and still do, attacked as, I don't know, liberal nonsense, I guess. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, happy times. 21 past the hour. We are we're getting some information from Bloomberg.com about stock futures tomorrow morning. Hold on to your nether regions when the market opens tomorrow, is the message I'm getting. CNN has a reporter, Drew Griffin. And he has done some reporting on this bloated terrorist watch list put together by the TSA, Transportation Security Agency, which is part of this weirdly named Homeland Security division of the government now, the biggest government agency put together since what? Since forever? You know, the Republicans, small business. Oh, yeah, I mean, small government. Oh, yeah, oh, okay. Anyway, there are now 1,308 names on, according to the ACLU, as of yesterday afternoon. And Drew Griffin of CNN is one of those names. He says, this all began in May, shortly after I began a series of investigative reports critical of the TSA. 11 flights now since May 19th on different airlines. My name pops up, forcing me to go to the counter, show my identification. Sometimes the agent has to make a call before I get my ticket. What does the TSA say? Nothing. At least nothing on camera. Over the phone, a public affairs worker told me again, I'm not on the list. And he doesn't think that someone in the TSA or anyone else is trying to get even with me. Now, the TSA, which, as I mentioned, is part of Homeland Security, said Mr. Griffin's name wasn't even on the watch list, and the agency blamed the airlines for the delays, the reporter explained. Of course. Yeah, it's the airlines. They make this stuff up. Sure. The airlines, on the other hand, said they were simply following the list provided by TSA. Well, obviously, the airlines are lying. A spokesman for the Transportation Safety or Security Agency said, so if there's any thought or shadow of thought that TSA somehow put Mr. Griffin on a watch list because of his reporting, it's absolutely fabricated. And Mr. Christopher White, a spokesman for the TSA, then immediately just fell over in gales of laughter. While the CNN reporter, Drew Griffin, once again tried to get his ticket punched. Well, I'm flying on the 16th of August. We'll see. Or the 15th. We'll see what happens then, right? That'll be fun. Mr. Malloy, will you step out of the line over here? What? 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 We found a bag of pot in your carry-on. What? Sorry, sir. You're on your way to Guantanamo. So, you know, I worry about that every time I fly. I just think about that. That's one of the reasons I take nothing with me. Nothing. On board. You know, I mean, no carry-on, nothing. I have, maybe $15 in ones. And my passport, always carry my passport, you never know. And a picture of Molly. So when I'm at 39,000 feet and the plane hits turbulence, I immediately pull out her picture and that calms me down. Ah! All right, two different health reports here that are unnerving, to say the least. I want to get to them. We may have to take a break here very quickly. Well, definitely. But the first one is it's from the Commonwealth Fund Foundation, whatever that is. It says the United States lags behind other industrialized nations in the quality of its health care despite having the costliest system in the world. The report was just released today. The report says that our healthcare system is plagued by inefficiency, inequality, and an incoherent national policy. The report said, quote, the U.S. spends twice per capita what other major industrialized countries spend on healthcare, and costs continue to rise faster than income, end quote. Now, what they used was they devised a 100-point scorecard to rate the system based on 37 categories, including access to health care and quality of health care and the efficiency of the health care. We came in at 65 points. Now, that's 2 points down from a previous study like this in 2006. The scores, then, of countries is compared to each other and the best-performing U.S. states, counties, or hospitals. Now, I'll have some of the results for that when we come back from the break. But this is really scary stuff. I can remember, certainly in my lifetime, certainly in the second half of my lifetime, hearing and believing that we had the best healthcare system on earth. I guess we still do if you're, if you're an international, a millionaire, financier, banker, oil baron, or have an apartment in Dubai. But if we're just working class people, middle class people, may not be true anymore. I'll share it with you and you decide. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M.
And when the broken hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. But though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
About 25 before the hour. All right, the report is put up by the Commonwealth Fund Foundation. It is a health study, healthcare study in the major industrialized nations regarding the quality of health care available to people, the citizens of those countries. This is the kind of stuff that I don't know if it'll make it on tomorrow night's news or not. The report was just out today. They were too focused tonight on network news on the wonderful news that the stock market is up 500 points in the past 2 days and oil is down to $130 a barrel, which means, we're all home free. But anyway, the report showed that us here in the U.S., we are losing ground in providing access to health care, and that we have uneven health care quality. Really? Digging a little further into the report, we ranked last among 19 industrialized states when it comes to preventing premature deaths from conditions like heart attacks. According to the report, up to 100,000 fewer people would die prematurely in the U.S. if the U.S. achieved the lower mortality rates of top-performing countries like France or Japan. I say because remember in Michael Moore's movie Sicko, how France was listed. Oh, never mind. Anyway, infant mortality rates remain high in the U.S. compared to other industrialized nations. According to, or access to health care was on the decline. Think about that. Access to health care on the decline. We are the only industrialized nation that can say that. Every other so-called industrialized nation has health care access for everyone, but not us. The report says there are more Americans without health insurance or without adequate insurance than at any time since this study was done. In 2007, 75 million working-age adults were either uninsured or underinsured. That's up from 61 million in 2003. Dear God, how many of those 75 million working-age adults have children? We scored poorly on efficiency, with patients subjected to duplicate tests, unnecessary hospital admissions, high administrative costs, and outdated record-keeping. It just goes on and on. Now, that is the more mild of the two reports. The other report, oh my God, the American Human Development Report, also titled Measure of America. It was funded by Oxfam America, the Conrad Hilton Foundation, and the Rockefeller Foundation. All right. Now, it shows that the United States now ranks 42nd in terms of life expectancy. 42nd. We live shorter lives than citizens of almost every other developed country on Earth. And while we have the second highest income per capita, which doesn't really mean that much, because per capita simply means if this guy makes $1 million and I make $100, then our per capita income is $500,050 or something like that. But anyway, we rank 42nd in terms of life expectancy. Now, that's just one of the conclusions from this report, which tries to explain why the United States, world's number one economy, we still are, has slipped to 12th place in terms of human development. Now, how do they define human development? Well, they rank health, education, income in the U.S. And when you take all that into consideration, this report, as they say, paints a surprising picture of a country that spends well over $5 billion each day on health care. More per person than any other country, and we're still going down the commode. Now, why is that? Why do you think that is? Where's the money going? Huh? Can you say insurance companies? Oh, you can? Good for you. Good for you. The other countries score better on the health and knowledge indices that make up the overall human development index, something called the HDI, which is calculated each year by the United Nations Development Program. Now, each of these countries has achieved better outcomes in areas like infant mortality and longevity while spending less per person. Japanese, for example, can expect to outlive Americans on average by more than 4 years. In fact, citizens of Israel, Greece, Singapore, Costa Rica, South Korea, and every Western European and Nordic country save one can expect to live longer than Americans. Now, one of the main problems, says the report, in this country is that 1 in 6 Americans, or about 50 million of us, are not covered by any health insurance, and so we have limited access to health care. As a result, here it is again, the U.S. is ranked 42nd in global life expectancy and 34th in terms of infants surviving to age one. Dear God, 34th. That means the U.S. infant mortality rate is on a par with that of Croatia, Estonia, and Poland. Now, there's more here. The U.S. has a higher percentage of our children living in poverty than any of the world's other industrialized nations. Think of that. The highest percentage of children. In fact, the report shows that 15% of American children, that's 10, almost 11 million children, live in families with incomes of less than $1,500 per month. What is $1,500 per month? What is it, about under $20,000 a year? It also reveals, the report does, that 14% of our population, about 40 million Americans, lack the literacy skills to perform simple everyday tasks like, oh, understanding newspaper articles, being able to read instruction manuals. 40 million of us. The report not only highlights the differences between the U.S. and other countries, it also picks up on the huge discrepancies among the states of the United States and the country's 435 congressional districts and between ethnic groups or racial groups. One of the report's co-authors says, quote, "The measure of America," that's the name of the report, "reveals huge gaps among some groups in our country to access opportunity and reach their potential. Some Americans are living anywhere from 30 to 50 years behind other Americans when it comes to issues we all care about, like health, education, and standard of living. For example, the State Human Development Index shows that people in last-ranked Mississippi are living 30 years behind those in first-ranked Connecticut." Income equality remains stark, too. The richest fifth of Americans earn, on average, $168,000 a year, almost 15 times the average of the lowest fifth of Americans, who make about $11,300. When you read something, you think, what the hell has happened to my country? The U.S., it says, is far behind many other countries in the support given to working families, particularly in terms of family leave, sick leave, and child care. The U.S. has no federally mandated maternity leave. You know, I've said before on this program, not that it's a newsflash for you because you should know it, that capitalism, the kind that is practiced here, it's kind of socialistic capitalism, socialism for the wealthy, capitalism, predatory capitalism for the rest of us, but that capitalism as practiced here is the most anti-family, anti-life, economic/political system imaginable. But no, we live in the land of the free and the home of the brave, where making that first million is right around the corner. Yes, it is. By God, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get mine. The U.S. also ranks first among the 30 wealthiest countries in terms of the number of people in prison, both in absolute terms and as a percentage of the total population. We are number one. What do we have? Close to 3 million people now in jail and prison. Unbelievable. That's more in raw numbers than China. And China has, what, a billion and a half people? It's more people in prison. Oh, well. We have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. Now, you've got to think about this stuff. This stuff has to factor in. It has to. We're 42nd in terms of life expectancy. We're 34th in terms of infant mortality. We're number one in raw numbers and as a percentage of population. In people in prison, let's do something patriotic quick before I open a vein. Here we go.
From Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A.
Yes, by God.
Right in every American heart.
Yeah.
At a time we stand and say.
Stand up, damn it. Hey.
And I'm proud to be an American.
Something,
Teacher, teach me to read because I have learning problems.
Oh, God. In a press release today, In a press release today, House Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers announced that he will hold a hearing July 25th examining, quote, the imperial presidency of George W. Bush and possible legal responses, end quote. The word impeachment was not mentioned. But it appears the hearing is going to examine some of that stuff that Dennis Kucinich talked about in his resolution to remove this rat bastard from office. Chairman Conyers said in a news release, quote, over the last 7-plus years, there have been numerous credible allegations of serious misconduct by officials in the Bush administration. Misconduct? The deaths of a million Iraqis? The deaths of almost 4,500 Americans? That is misconduct? No. Misconduct is when you're in class and you fart. That's misconduct. These are war crimes, John. Conyers said in the news release, over the past 7 years, there have been numerous credible allegations of serious misconduct by officials in the Bush administration. At the same time, the administration has adopted what many would describe as a radical view of its own powers and authorities. Radical view? Radical view? Is that what you call it, John? Can you not say the F word? Just once, John! F! Fascism! As chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I believe it is imperative that we pursue a comprehensive review commensurate to this constitutionally dangerous combination of circumstances. God, that's great alliteration. Jesus, John. Next Friday's hearings will be an important part of that ongoing effort, end quote. Now, Conyers didn't say, who would be at his hearing, but he laid out a variety of abuses that would be examined, including the politicization of the Justice Department, misuse of executive branch authority, misuse of investigatory and detention authority with regard to U.S. citizens, foreign nationals, including questions regarding the legality of surveillance, detention, interrogation, and rendition programs. Illegality? Oh, I thought it was just misconduct. Manipulation of intelligence, misuse of war powers, improper retaliation against administration critics, misuse of authority in denying Congress and the American people the ability to oversee and scrutinize conduct within the administration, and on and on and on. Now, you'll remember the committee ignored Kucinich's first impeachment attempt last month, and Kucinich reintroduced a single article on Tuesday. In a response, Conyers promised a hearing that would accumulate, quote, all the things that constitute an imperial presidency, end quote. But, of course, Conyers again indicated his unwillingness to actually vote on impeachment, regardless of whatever Dennis Kucinich has put together. No impeachment. We shall hold a hearing on the imperial presidency of George W. Bush and possible legal responses. Mr. Conyers, there's only one response. Remove the son of a bitch from office. Or at least indict him. These filthy, dung-eating Republican senators will never vote to remove him. But at least, for God's sake, impeach him. So that in the future, people can look back and say, holy God, that man was president after doing that, and they didn't remove him from office? Because it's going to take historians. How many? Let me see a show of hands. How many people out there really think President Barack Obama is going to do a goddamn thing about the crimes, high crimes, misdemeanors, and acts of treason committed by this gang? Let me see. Do I see any hands? Well, I'll be damned. Not one! Going to take a look at the imperial presidency. A, Representative Conyers. Well, that ought to be fun. Yeah. Who are you going to get to testify? You're going to have, you're going to issue subpoenas. Everybody in the Bush crime family just gives you the finger and tells you to, you know, go play in some other sandbox. They're not going to respond to you, John. They don't have to. Why should they? I mean, this is nonsense. The Constitution dictates an indictment of this bastard. But no, we'll have a let's have a nice play hearing on the aspects of the George W. Bush imperial presidency. Let's do that. Yes, that'll be fun. That'll be fun. And Charlie Gibson and Brian Williams can give it, oh, I don't know what, maybe a 30-second reader on the night that you begin, the night of the day you begin. And Katie Couric, well, she'll stay completely away from it because she has a report on how the dogs of cigarette smokers are getting canine lung cancer. Huh? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. 29 years ago, Tuesday just passed, Jimmy Carter gave a nationally televised address watched and heard by 65 million Americans. And, of course, Carter was immediately attacked by the right-wing Republican noise machine. And to this day, Jimmy Carter is ridiculed for the speech. But what was it about Carter's speech that caused the right wing to whip itself into a frenzy of condemnation? And as Bob writes in his email, why do they continue to heap criticism upon the man for a speech given almost 30 years ago? What really drove the right-wing Republican noise machine into overdrive was what Carter had to say about energy, conservation, and oil. Here's part of what he said. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never. From now on, every new addition to our demand for energy will be met from our own production and our own conservation. The generation-long growth in our dependence on foreign oil will be stopped dead in its tracks right now and then reversed as we move through the 1980s. For I am tonight setting the further goal of cutting our dependence on foreign oil by one half by the end of the next decade, a saving of over 4.5 million barrels of imported oil per day. Point two, to ensure that we meet these standards, I will use my presidential authority to set import quotas. I'm announcing tonight that for 1979 and 1980, I will forbid the entry into this country of one drop of foreign oil more than these goals allow. Point three, to give us energy security, I'm asking for the most massive peacetime commitment of funds and resources in our nation's history to develop America's own alternative sources of fuel. I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000. These efforts will cost money, a lot of money, and that is why Congress must enact the windfall profits tax without delay. It will be money well spent. Unlike the billions of dollars that we ship to foreign countries to pay for foreign oil, these funds will be paid by Americans to Americans. These funds will go to fight, not to increase, inflation and unemployment. Point four. I'm asking Congress to require as a matter of law that our nation's utility companies cut their massive use of oil by 50% within the next decade and switch to other fuels. Point five. To make absolutely certain that nothing stands in the way of achieving these goals, I will urge Congress to create an energy mobilization board, which, like the War Production Board in World War II, will have the responsibility and authority to cut through the red tape, the delays, and the endless roadblocks to completing key energy projects. Point six, I'm proposing a bold conservation program to involve every state, every county and city, and every average American in our energy battle. This effort will permit you to build conservation into your homes and your lives at a cost you can afford. I'm proposing tonight an extra $10 billion over the next 10 years to strengthen our public transportation systems. And I'm asking you, for your good and for your nation's security, to take no unnecessary trips, to use carpools or public transportation whenever you can, to park your car one extra day per week, to obey the speed limit, and to set your thermostat to save fuel. Every act of energy conservation like this is more than just common sense. I tell you, it's an act of patriotism. Every gallon of oil each one of us saves is a new form of production. It gives us more freedom, more confidence, that much more control over our own lives. I do not promise you that this struggle for freedom will be easy. I do not promise a quick way out of our nation's problems, when the truth is that the only way out is an all-out effort. What I do promise you is that I will lead our fight, and I will enforce fairness in our struggle, and I will ensure honesty, and above all, I will act. We can manage the short-term shortages more effectively, and we will. But there are no short-term solutions to our long-range problems. There is simply no way to avoid sacrifice. And as Jonathan Schwartz wrote on his blog, thanks, America's crazy right wing. We couldn't have ignored our most important problems for three decades and thereby made them much worse without you. Yeah, I remember that speech. And I remember thinking at the time that I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I really didn't. You know, 1979, 30 years ago, I was too involved in something else, I guess. I don't know what I was involved in. I have no idea. Oh, yeah, I had a one-year-old son then, but... And this, just remember, this is one of the speeches that Jimmy Carter gave, that these right-wing devils, these filthy right-wing devils who have corrupted this country for the past 30 years, use as a touchstone as to how out of touch with reality Jimmy Carter was. You know, Carter, the one who talked about alternative energy sources and conservation, Carter, the one who talked about trying to find peace in the Middle East. What does the right wing tell you about Carter?
Well, he sent those boys into the desert over there, and they crashed, and he didn't know how to save our hostages.
And, of course, what the right-wingers never talk about is that the Iranian Revolution was a direct result of the policies of another Republican. Was it Dwight Eisenhower? When in 1953, when the Shah of Iran was installed after we overthrew the government of Iran and yada, 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 yada. But that's because right-wing devils don't know anything about their own history. It is willful ignorance. That's the only thing that allows them to continue to make such ridiculous charges as such as Jimmy Carter was a bad president. Jimmy Carter had a bunch of morons to try to work with in the House and the Senate, a lot of whom were Democrats. But it was a Republican noise machine that attacked everything that this man ever tried to do. Maybe in solidarity with our war effort, Jimmy Carter will sacrifice the same way George Bush did. George Bush gave up playing golf. Maybe Jimmy Carter can give up building homes for poor people. What do you think? Huh? You think that might work? Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these sons of bitches, these right-wingers? I've said it before. It is visceral. It's gut level. It's just, it's right down there in the viscera. What was it about that speech that activated the nut fringe of the Republican Party, which was in fact the heart and soul of the Republican Party? But you know, a lot of commentators try to make it sound like, oh, just those people on the fringe. No, 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 no. That was the absolute guts of the Republican Party. What was it? Well, it was perceived to be anti-oil, for one thing. For another thing, it was perceived to be anti-oil. And for a third thing, and fourth, it was perceived to be anti-oil. And the oil companies who owned, were starting the, they owned the Republican Party back in the 70s. They own most of the Democratic Party now. But the oil companies are not going to let that stand. What? What did he say? What did he say? Take public transportation? Increase mileage? Oh, no, you're kidding me. He said that last night? I'm sorry. I was busy. I was out eating steak and lobster and, you know, hanging out with lobbyists. He said what? Oh, what a jokester. What a jokester. Oh, my God. What a jokester.
Always on fire. Everyone has a system, but they can't seem to win. Even Bob Geldof looks alarmingly thin. I got to get on that shuttle, get me out of this place. But there's gonna be warfare up there in outer space. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? It gets harder to understand it. Things are tough all over on Earth.
People need to hear loud and clear is that we're running out of energy in America.
Yeah. Okay, the program would not be complete here in the segment without a bit of war news. So let's move right along. U.S.-led coalition troops have killed 8 Afghan civilians in an airstrike in the western province of Farah during a raid against suspected militants. That's according to the U.S. military. The acknowledgement came as reports of more civilian deaths caused by a fresh air raid by foreign forces emerged on Thursday, today, from the neighboring province of Herat. The airstrike on Tuesday was summoned after a coalition convoy came under sustained attack from machine gun and indirect fire from a number of houses adjacent to a road, the U.S. military said. The statement from the military said, quote, the coalition convoy returned fire and called for close air support on the enemy positions. A house was hit, 8 civilians were killed, 2 others injured. The report went on to say coalition forces never intentionally target non-combatants and deeply regret any occurrence such as this, where civilians are killed and injured as a result of insurgent activity and actions. End quote. Afghan officials said 9 people, all members of the same family, were killed in this bombing. The issue of civilian casualties, of course, is highly sensitive for the Western-backed government of Hamid Karzai, and is undermining support for the presence of foreign troops, NATO troops, and U.S. troops in that country. The U.S. military says that investigating reports of Afghan officials that around from Afghan officials that around 60 civilians were killed in 2 separate airstrikes earlier this month in eastern Afghanistan, and more than 800 civilians have been killed since the start of 2007 in Afghanistan by foreign and Afghan forces, according to Afghan officials and the UN. And here in the Georgia, right here, in Metro Atlanta, we lost 3 soldiers in 1 day in Afghanistan. John Ayers, corporal in the Army. Matthew Phillips, corporal in the Army. And Mitch Young, master sergeant. Mr. Young, who was almost 40, of suburban Atlanta, was killed when his vehicle struck an improvised explosive device. He had been assigned to the 1st Battalion, 7th Special Forces Group. That's airborne. It was his 3rd deployment in Afghanistan, along with 1 in Iraq. 4 deployments into a war zone. His mother said, quote, "I was surprised to hear how he died. They were so well trained to spot those IEDs. Army Corporal Ayers' final mission had him unnerved. He had been assigned to a remote base in Afghanistan's Kunar province, a known haven for Taliban militants who had been increasing their attacks on coalition forces. His father of suburban Atlanta said none of them were very excited to be there, none of the soldiers. Corporal Matthew Phillips of suburban Atlanta also was stationed in the same province with the same battalion. And the last time he was home, Corporal Matthew Phillips planned his own funeral. His father, Michael Phillips, said, quote, "I was just told about that, but it doesn't surprise me. I'd always tell him, you're going to be fine, you're coming home, the odds are with you," end quote. And apparently, Corporal Phillips did not bother to tell his family, including his new bride, about the arrangements for his funeral. He didn't want them to be troubled. As far as Master Sergeant Mitch Young, few soldiers were better trained than Young. Within 8 years of enlisting in the Army, he had been accepted into Special Forces, where he rose to a command position. His mother said, quote, "He was a team leader, and he really loved his guys," end quote. Before his last deployment, Sergeant Young and his wife Robin hosted a barbecue for his charges and their families. His widow said, quote, "He was the daddy to all of them," end quote. Phillips and Ayers were nearing the conclusion of their tours in Afghanistan. Corporal Ayers died just a week before it was to end. His family was planning a welcome home party in 3 weeks. His dad said, quote, "We had already started buying the decorations," end quote. And Corporal Phillips had even more to look forward to. His younger sister was pregnant, going to have a boy. They were going to name the boy Michael Andrew. His dad said he couldn't wait to be an uncle. His sister had the baby Sunday. On Monday, she learned of her brother's death. They renamed the baby Matthew Andrew Nix. We'll be back after the break.
Bullets fire, burn to
country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
So at night I sit and I watch for stars to stay. They wink and then they're gone down the Milky Way.
25 before the hour, let's do some phone calls. You want to do that? Let's do it. The phone number here is 800-989-1480 if you'd like to join in. Start with Scott in St. Louis listening on Sirius. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, I don't know if Bush would admit to this, but it seems like with him making an effort to talk to Iran, that maybe that's causing the oil prices to drop considerably.
Well, I'm sure that's one of the factors. I don't know if a $5 drop is a considerable drop. Maybe it is. I'm so freaked out lately that it's hard for me to find a rational point of view about anything that the Bush crime family does or talks about or what have you. But I would imagine that the idea of a conversation with somebody you've been threatening to nuke, and that somebody happens to be a major oil producer, yeah, it probably has some sort of effect, yeah.
Well, and then you got the Strait of Hormuz there. It's like kind of a narrow...
Yeah, it is. Like a bottleneck, huh?
And you got like half the oil in the world going through there, and, you know, it's... When Israel was threatening Iran, that's when oil really spiked, I don't know, from like 120 to 145. So, you know, maybe, you know, it looks like, I mean, they're opening up a diplomatic office, or maybe they're not calling it that in Iran. And somebody from the State Department's going to be sitting in the same room with somebody from Iran. I mean, they don't want to call it negotiating, but basically that's what they're doing. They're, negotiating with evil Iran. I think that's a good sign. I don't know. I mean, he still could, lose his mind, or somebody could lose their mind and try to attack Iran. But, you know, then that's basically going to destroy the capitalist system. And I don't think, I think there's a lot of people with power that don't want that to happen.
Well, at least not destroy the oil companies. I think the kind of capitalism that the Republicans talk about all the time as being the best form of the best economic or political form available, that kind of capitalism died a long time ago. And, of course, it never was the best form. The best form would be the what Jefferson talked about. I think, I don't know, I'm just guessing here, but the idea of the small business owner, the farmer, the craftsman, the artisan. And as far as, oil going down because the Bush crime family decides to send some sort of low-level envoy to talk with the Iranians, Okay, the price of oil drops, which does nothing about the $12 trillion in debt that Bush has put us, does nothing about the imminent collapse of banks, according to people in the banking industry. Hell, I don't know. I just try to get through this life and make it on to the next. But none of the really mega problems... I mean, you're right. Sitting down and talking with the Iranians is a lot better than continuing to threaten them and then having to follow through on the threats at some point, which is total insanity. I don't care who does it. I don't care if Iran, Israel, or the United States feels the froggiest and makes the first jump. It's insanity. It's just total insanity. I honestly do not believe that the Iranians are willing to launch anything against Israel, ever, because they understand the consequences. Iranians don't want to be annihilated in the blink of an eye any more than the Israelis do. So it's nonsense, just utter nonsense, Because, you know, the Iranians have their own domestic and foreign policy, and to a lot of people outside that country, it may seem a bit bizarre, unlike our foreign policy, which always seems perfectly sane and logical. Excuse me, I'm sorry. The Iranian foreign policy may seem a little odd or bizarre to people outside their country, but I don't think they're interested in mass suicide any more than the Russians were or the Americans were during the 50-year-long mega tonnage, all sorts of MIRVs and multiple warheads and bombs and nuclear hell positioned. So on a flip of a switch, the whole goddamn planet would go up. You know, I think the natural instinct of DNA, whether it's Iranian or Israeli or Russian or Paraguayan, is to continue to goddamn live. Wouldn't you think? So as far as this corrupt U.S. regime sending somebody to talk, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Always best to talk instead of start hurling tactical nukes back and forth around a flashpoint like the Middle East, or if you want to consider Iran to be the Middle East, which it really isn't, but you know what I'm saying. So. But no matter how much talking they do, and look at North Korea. North Korea blew up an old cooling tower that hadn't been used in forever. I don't know, just a useless pile of junk. And the six-part talks and all this other stuff, all of a sudden we're talking with the North Koreans, and they've decided they're going to be good people. And who else was in the axis of evil? Iraq, Iran, and North Korea? Was that the axis of evil, or was it Syria? Hell, I don't even know. Okay, so if we're going to talk to Iran and we're talking to the North Koreans, wow, that sure is a lot better than what this filthy George Bush and his corrupt Dick Cheney had been doing for the past 7 years, taking everybody to the brink of utter disaster, causing the deaths of nobody knows how many Afghans, Iranians, Iraqis. We know how many Israelis and Americans die. We know how many Brits died. We know how many NATO troops died in Afghanistan. But as far as the Muslims, as far as the Persians, as far as the Arabs, we don't know nothing, do we? No. Who was it? That first crazy tobacco-chewing general?
We don't do Iraqi body counts. Besides, they're not really people anyway. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah, it's really grand that we're talking. I'm serious. Rob is calling from Mount Iron, Minnesota, listening on Sirius. Hey, Rob.
Oh, good evening, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, too. You know, the whole thing is we're this war on terror, our financial crisis, and everything that's going on out there right now. How did this all start? You know, Osama bin Laden. And if we actually put all of our efforts, America, into going after him and putting him out of commission, don't you think it would be a really great where we could be able to take and finally say, hey, guess what? We won the war on terror.
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but terror is not it's not an entity against which you can wage war. Terror, by definition, is a war on terror is insane. That's like saying a war on water or a war on thunderstorms.
It's like a war on drugs. We never won the war on drugs.
Right.
You know, let's face it. It's where Osama bin Laden caused us be able to take and spend hundreds of billions of dollars, and the whole thing is we've taken over other countries, and guess what? The guy who started all of this, he's out there laughing his ass off in some cave somewhere, you know?
Well, that's
what... Are you following my train of thought?
Well, yeah, that's what we're told, that he's laughing his ass off in some cave somewhere. But I just sometimes wonder, you know, we created Osama bin Laden back to fight the Russians, the Soviets. And I don't know, he somehow drifted off the reservation, as Donald Rumsfeld used to love to say. So
we've got Saddam Hussein, hung him. But guess what? Didn't finally be able to take and solve all the problems that started with there was one guy out there. And stupid white men, it's where, you know, I mean, they were the ones that voted Bush in 2000 and 2004. It was where he carried the stupid white men vote. And the whole thing is where until we finally get to a point where people start thinking the stupid white men vote, it's where we're not going to be able to change anything, don't you think?
Well, let's hope we wake up. Thanks, Dick. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 open lines. What, did I piss somebody off tonight? The phone number here is 800-989-1480. So why don't you join us?
From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So it appears that Bush is going to adopt the Barack Obama policy of negotiating with our alleged enemies, right? I'm glad to see this happen, let's be honest, but it just infuriates me. How long ago was it? 2 months ago, Bush was in the Israeli Knesset talking about appeasement. Huh? Right? Talking about appeasement. What is John McCain going to do now? Bomb, 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 Iran. So we're going to have a diplomatic presence into Iran for the first time in 30 years. According to The Guardian of the UK, an announcement will be made in the next month to establish U.S. intersection, a halfway house, to setting up a full embassy. And this is what The Guardian says. The news of the shift by Bush, who has pursued a hawkish approach to Iran throughout his tenure, comes at a critical time in U.S.-Iranian relations after weeks that have seen tensions rise with Israel conducting war games and to Iran carrying out long-range missile tests. A thaw appears to be underway. The White House announced that William Burns, senior State Department official, is to be sent to Switzerland on Saturday to hear Tehran's response to a European offer aimed at resolving the nuclear standoff. And Burns is to sit at the table with Iranian officials, despite George Bush's repeated ruling out direct talks on the nuclear issue until Iran suspends its uranium enrichment program. Blah, 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 blah. Bush has taken a hard line with Iran throughout the last 7 years, but in the dying days of his administration, it is believed he is keen to have a positive legacy that he can point to. Look, there's my positive legacy. Look over there. See, that's my positive legacy. Don't look at New Orleans. Don't look at Iran. Look over there. Look over there. See that? See that? Iranian frontman Mahmoud Ahmadinejad indicated earlier this week that he was not against the opening of the U.S. mission. Iran would consider favorably any request aimed at boosting relations between the two countries. There has been an intense debate within the Bush administration over Iran, with Dick Cheney in favor of military action against Iranian nuclear plants and the State Department in favor of diplomacy. Don't tell me that Condoleezza Rice got into a worm wrestle with Cheney and won. What did she do? Reach inside his chest and turn off his pacemaker?
The State Department has been pressing the White House for the last 2 years to reestablish diplomatic relations with Tehran. God, I hate these people. Dick is calling from Seattle, listening on KPTK. Dick, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike, you know, I want to talk about why we should be looking at the real estate market up in Canada. Yeah. I mean, you know, even if we are about 500 years past due for another emerging ice age, I'm starting to think maybe there's a better option going on up there.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I just wanted to briefly respond, though, to a caller's question I heard yesterday on your show on whether 9/11 was an inside job. You know, there's one aspect to that makes it, I think, a real easy call. You know, if you just consider the collapse of the three steel frame buildings, you know, there that happened for the first time in architectural history, you know, due to these small, short-lived fires. I mean, you have to know it could only be a controlled demolition. And if that's the case, and it was admitted by the owner, that at least in Building 7's case, then you can only have an inside administration job. I mean, there's no other place to go.
Well, I have no doubt. Like I said, I'm not clear on the specifics. I'm not clear if it were if it will turn out to be, if history can ever figure out the truth, turn out to be a literal inside job or just an action on the part of the Bush crime family that allowed everything to happen. Maybe some subgroup of the U.S. government operating outside, a total group of bandits who set these buildings up to collapse. I don't know. But like I've said before, Dick, the story that is out there for official consumption to me, as far as I'm concerned, is so much bat squeeze. It's absolute garbage. If people want to eat from that garbage heap, go ahead. I mean, you know, there's nothing, I almost said it's a free country. You can believe what you want. Oops, almost lost my head there. But if people want to eat from that heap of garbage, go ahead. As far as I'm concerned, the story that we've been told is an absolute lie. I don't know how it breaks out, but it's an absolute lie.
It's another blue ribbon committee. I mean, how many of those have we seen that cover up these major crimes?
Yeah.
And, you know, we got to keep in mind that most of the eyewitnesses and survivors reported large explosions just before the collapse. I mean, they were injured in those things. And these collapses were initiated, you know, just after a fire marshal made it up to the 78th floor of the South Tower. And he reported on his phone that there was only two isolated pockets of fire and they could be knocked down with two lines. And, of course, right after that, and perhaps because of what he said, the buildings were detonated. So
yeah, I definitely agree, Dick, that the whole thing is bogus. Everything you're talking about, I'm sure the folks who are curious about this have probably gone through all that information. It's all out there on the internet. My God, there are so many video presentations available. Some of them that have wound up as feature length documentaries. So it's available to anyone who wants, you know, if people are sick of the blue pill and want to try the red pill, be careful because it'll take you into a real rat's nest, that will make you start, wondering if you're still sane or what's up, what's down, what's left, what's right. But there's enough available out there for anybody to, dip their toe into it or dive in head first. It's all there. It's all there. All right. When we come back, your phone calls. There you all are. I knew you were out there, you little boogers. So we will take phone calls when we come back. And also, let me see what else we got. Oh, we have a fable for you, The Scorpion and the Frog. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Coming up in about 25 minutes, we have a fable for you. Back to your phone calls here in just a second. Prairie 2 has a suggestion about Bush's sudden interest in talking with the Iranians. China is partnering with Iran to produce massive amounts of natural gas that will be exported to Europe, Pakistan, and India. And that's going to produce large amounts of non-dollar revenue for all the parties involved. In addition, Iran now has long-range hypersonic anti-ship missiles, and China has the satellites to provide targeting data. Time for normalization of relations.
Yeah, I would think so. Oh, my God.
All right, back to your phone call. Phone calls. Bo is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Bo.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's how going. How are you?
Oh, besides going a little crazy from all this crap, I'm doing okay. I'm alive.
Oh, well, that counts.
Yes, it does. Hey, and I want the red pill, please. The red pill.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, I want to try to avoid being sounding like one of those conspiracy theorists like everybody else, but what does it really matter who we vote for if these Bilderbergs pick who goes into office and what it really goes on? What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know anymore. I still operate under probably a drunken, hysterical illusion that... that there is still representative government, that we do manage to pick to a certain extent. I know. The corporate power picks the candidates that we can wrestle over. But I still, call me a paleo-liberal, I still believe some of this stuff is still possible. It's still possible to provide decent self-government in this. Oh, never mind. Hell, I don't know. I have no idea, Bo. I give up.
One quick thing, man. I want to put it out there. Tell everybody, Tesla, Nikola Tesla, mm-hmm. had the real stuff, man, the real secrets. Energy, he had it. He had the real way to do it.
Well, I know he, wasn't he the one who really invented the radio?
Yeah. Not Marconi. It was him. It came out later in the courts that he did it.
Yeah.
And he had a wireless transmission of energy. We don't need these cables and lines running in the air. You would have just an antenna on your house, and it would be beamed to you. We live on one big magnet, and we have enough power that's in the air. You don't need oil. I mean, he took the internal combustion engine out of a car in 1930-whatever, out of a Pierce Aero, and put an AC motor in it and pulled energy from the air, from the earth.
From the magnetic field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we could be doing that. I mean, what is all this crap? This is BS, man. We're just eating it up. It's being spoon-fed BS.
I hear you. I'm going
nuts, man. I'm going. Oh, wait, I'm already there.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Thanks, Bo. I appreciate what you had to say. Yeah, there are a couple of historical references like that. Tesla. I wasn't aware, though. Thanks, Bo, that he. He had done that with a Pierce Aero, really, and used what sort of a drive mechanism? I mean, surely it must be a little bit more involved than just using the Earth's magnetic field. I don't know. And don't flood me, people, with a whole bunch of stuff about Tesla, because I can't, I just, my eyes start to glaze over, you know. And I hate to admit that, but I'm kind of stuck with that. Marty is calling from Riverside, California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
My pleasure.
I was just listening online. I was waiting. I was just thinking of so many issues. I wish I could co-host with you one day. I got so much on my mind. Just overwhelming.
Oh, yeah?
But I had a, just before I forget, about... VP for Obama. I mean, I think Caroline Kennedy would be a good choice, but I know that she's involved in a vetting. She could do a Cheney and go ahead and pick herself. But
yeah,
I was,
right.
I was thinking about the war on terror, like you guys were talking about earlier, and we really need a war on cancer because cancer kills more people than terror, but, you know, of course, there's no money in that.
Well, the war on cancer was started by Dick Nixon, 40 years ago. It just, a matter of fact, I think he used those very words, declaring a war on cancer. But the approach was all wrong, and it's only coming about as the DNA sequencing was figured out, a genetic treatment of diseases is next on the horizon. I don't think there's enough radiation or enough scalpels or enough chemo on Earth to murder cancer. It's got to be a different approach. And back in the 70s, when the war on cancer was declared, it was using that approach of, you know, burn it, cut it, or destroy it with chemicals, and I think it's pretty clear right now. I know it was clear in my family. I've lost two family members to cancer, and the treatments that they got, and they got decent treatment, just simply it prolonged the agony a bit, but it didn't work. So, as far as a war on cancer, I think if we devoted the money that we spend on death and destruction, and you know what I'm talking about, into pure research into the genetic makeup of all these various kinds of cancer. There's no such thing as a cancer. I mean, it's got hundreds, I understand, of variations and mutations, and it requires working against it on a genetic level, subcellular level. That's what I've been told. That's what I've read. I'm not trying to sound like I know what I'm talking about here, but that's what I've read. And that's where we need to be. There's so many things like that we could be doing, so many positive things, but no, here we are in the 21st century, and we're still deciding the way to do things is to bomb and kill and have our people killed and kill more people and death and destruction. And screwing around over something as ridiculous as oil.
Exactly. I think we wasted 8 years. You know.
Well, I think we've wasted probably a century. We should have known long ago that what we were doing was not going to work. And had it not been for the ignorance that people like you and me historically have always displayed, we've never displayed anything beyond butt-level consciousness, and it's a shame. Because,
yeah, I think, if Gore could have got in there, it'd be a different situation. But even then, you know, I think Obama's going to be cleaning up the mess of the Bush years, you know, the snatch and grab government. I think that, you know, we have to, as a people, get together and realize that, you know, we need real leadership. We need people that are not, you know, sticking their hand in each other's pocket. We need to move on if we want to survive as a race of people.
Well, I hope Barack Obama understands that to the degree that you do, but I'm beginning to have my doubts. I really am. I'm sorry. Now, if you're an Obama supporter, you know, don't bother. I mean, don't email me. You've got your opinion and I've got mine, and my opinion about Barack Obama is collapsing. I'm beginning to see there's not really a whole lot of difference between Obama and Clinton, Hillary Clinton. And I just don't want to talk about it. That's what you say to your spouse, right? When you see the storm clouds gathering on the horizon, you know, oh, man, we're going to have a king hell fight tonight. So how do you diffuse it? You say, dear, I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk about it. And if you're hip, if you really are hip about your marriage, you'll shut the hell up right at that point, right? When the other one says, I don't want to talk about it, shut up. Well, that's the way I feel about the Obama-Clinton thing. I just don't want to talk about it. Or the Obama thing. I just don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk about it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Everyone's stiff.
taking the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Back to your phone calls. John is calling from Sacramento, listening on the internet. Hey, John.
Hey, what's happening, Mike?
You are.
Right on. I'm rejoicing. You know why?
Why?
Because 1240 KSAC.
Yeah.
It's gone. Now it's a Christian station. So now instead of six Christian stations, we got seven. And I'm forced to listen on the internet.
Yeah, well, I don't quite understand that, but... Neither do I, man. Yeah.
Hey, anyhow, what I really wanted to talk about was the fact that this is all deliberate. You know, everybody in government is acting like, well, what's going on? We're going to save you with a $300 stimulus check.
Yo, yay, hooray, clap, clap, clap,
yeah, exactly.
Clap, clap.
When in reality, it's all the same thing all over again. The SNL of the 80s, the war on terror, the fake energy crisis in California where they snagged $79 billion out of our coffers. And now the mortgage crisis, and now the oil, which is all pure speculation, and you know that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, now I understand that Nancy Pelosi wants another stimulus rebate, tax rebate, because the first one worked so well, which is further proof that Nancy Pelosi has as much business being Speaker of the House as my my dead aunt has.
Anyhow, what I wanted to suggest was this. When I was in university, we studied the Michael Jordan effect.
Michael Jordan effect?
The MJ effect. Some economists came out with a figure, which was in the gazillions, about how when he moved from place to place, how much economical movement he would create.
Yeah.
And how much he lifted the NBA and all that effect. I'd like somebody to come up, like some social economists, to come up with the Bush effect.
The Bush effect?
Yeah.
I don't think it would be like the Michael Jordan effect.
No, it would be completely downward, man, what he's done. I mean, what these people have done, the image, the economy, our standing in the world, the division of our country.
Mm.
It's unbearable almost.
Well, that could be done if John Conyers would just open up impeachment hearings and allow people to come and testify before the House Judiciary Committee. If the Republicans wanted to turn tail and run like they usually do for these kinds of hearings where there might be an element of truth, so be it. But allow the testimony to begin and write the indictment for this crazed son of a bitch who's in the White House. And then people will understand what Bush has done. None of us can really put all of it together. It's like the old fable of 10 blindfolded people putting their hands on an elephant, trying to describe what the beast looked like. What it will take, and according to Pelosi and the rest of these Democratic thugs, it's not going to happen. But what it would take would be impeachment hearings where witnesses can provide finally the truth to the American people, and
that's what should be happening.
Well, sure it should, yeah.
But think about it. It's the illusion of choice, you know.
Mm.
Democrat or Republican, Coke or Pepsi, you know. I mean, it's all the same. I mean, in reality, there's only few that stand out that really have vision, you know, like vision like they have in Germany, where they derive 50% of their energy out of the sun, or in Spain, where they derive 50% out of the energy out of the wind, or in Brazil, where they fuel their cars from the oil of a nut, you know?
Oil of a nut?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think
of a palm tree.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something witty to say to that. Oil of a nut. It just, I don't know, it reminds me of, never mind. All right, that's good stuff, John. Thank you.
All right,
man. Appreciate you checking in. We're getting close to another break, but let's go to Daryl, who's listening in Seattle on KPTK. Hey, Daryl.
Hello. Hey, I'm calling because I'm really upset about the way the laws have been since 1937. They've been telling us lies about marijuana. Constantly telling us that it's going to make us crazy or it's going to make us forget stuff.
Yeah.
And come on, alcohol does all that. We know that alcohol does all that. And it's if you drink enough alcohol,
Daryl, let me ask you something.
We need a constitutional amendment.
Okay, Daryl, hold on a second. I've got to ask you. Out of all the stuff we've been talking about on this program for the past 6 months, what in the hell would possess you to call in and talk about the legalization?
Because
of
they
marijuana?
Just busted a medical marijuana, a peaceful medical marijuana group that was legally operating in Seattle. It's the front page of the Seattle Times.
Oh, okay.
And it's just not another medical marijuana story. But, you know, I'm for legalization all the way. I think it should be as legal as lettuce and about tax just about as much.
Well,
if you
it is.
Going to commercial sales, you got to pay taxes on it.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think most people with a brain understand that the number one cash crop in the United States is not corn, even though prices have gone up. It's not soybeans. It's not wheat. It's reefer, and it's all untaxed, unregulated, unlicensed, on this, on that, which is probably the way it should be. On the other hand, oh, Jesus, I don't know. Hey, thanks for checking in, pal. We have a break here. We'll be back. When we come back, we have a fable for you, The Scorpion and the Frog. You're going to love it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure. Mike Malloy.
In the middle of seven side.
Yeah, here's the crew, or the cure, or something. 25 before the hour. Guess what? It's time for Bridget's Talking Stick Circle. Hi, Mike, and trying to make sense of the happenings in the world lately. I know, that way lies insanity. I came across a fable that I've always loved, The Scorpion and the Frog. One day a scorpion looked around at the mountain where he lived and decided that he wanted to change. So he set out on a journey through the forest and the hills. He climbed over rocks and under vines and kept going until he reached a river. The river was wide and swift, and the scorpion stopped to reconsider the situation. He couldn't see any way across, so he ran upriver, and then he checked downriver, all the while thinking that he might have to turn back. Suddenly, he saw a frog sitting in the rushes by the bank of the stream on the other side of the river. He decided to ask the frog for help getting across the stream. "Hello, Mr. Frog," called the scorpion across the water. "Would you be so kind as to give me a ride on your back across the river?" "Well now, Mr. Scorpion, how do I know that if I try to help you, you won't try to kill me?" asked the frog hesitantly. "Because," the scorpion replied, "if I try to kill you, then I would die too, for, you see, I cannot swim." Now, this seemed to make sense to the frog. But he asked, "Well, what about when I get close to the bank, you could still try to kill me and get back to the shore?" "That's true," agreed the scorpion, "but then I wouldn't be able to get to the other side of the river." "All right, then," said the frog. "How do I know you won't just wait till we get to the other side and then kill me?" "Ah," crooned the scorpion, "because, you see, once you've taken me to the other side of the river, I would be so grateful for your help that I wouldn't, it would hardly be fair to reward you with death, now would it?" So the frog agreed to take the scorpion across the river. He swam over to the bank and settled himself near the mud to pick up his passenger. The scorpion crawled onto the frog's back, his sharp claws prickling into the frog's soft hide, and the frog slid into the river. The muddy water swirled around them, but the frog stayed near the surface so the scorpion would not drown. He kicked strongly through the first half of the stream, his flippers paddling wildly against the current. Halfway across the river, the frog suddenly felt a sharp sting in his back, and out of the corner of his eye saw the scorpion remove his stinger from the frog's back. A deadly numbness began to creep into his limbs. "You fool!" croaked the frog. "Now we shall both die. Why on earth did you do that?" The scorpion shrugged and did a little jig on the drowning frog's back. "I could not help myself. It's my nature." Then they both sank into the muddy waters of the swiftly flowing river. So, Bridget writes, "I started thinking first about the willingness of the House leadership to let the Judiciary Committee consider a single one of the articles of impeachment proposed by Kucinich. Why now?" I asked myself. Well, the lying us into a war issue is the one article that, upon investigation, probably won't implicate Democrats. So it's fairly safe, unlike the ones dealing with torture, illegal wiretapping, and so forth. If there are hearings into impeachment, it may calm progressives who are howling for Pelosi and Reid's heads at a time when the Democrats need everyone rallying behind Obama. As the country sinks further into financial chaos, it will distract everyone and give people a scapegoat to focus their anger on. Don't get me wrong, not that Bush doesn't deserve to be impeached and indicted and arrested and rendered to Afghanistan, where some goat herd who got turned in for a couple of bucks by an enemy and tortured for 3 years at Gitmo before he was sent home can have 10 minutes in a dark room with chuckle nuts who won't be chuckling and probably have no more, well, you know. But I digress. Of course, Bush deserves to be impeached and all the rest, but he's deserved that since September 12th, 2001. In fact, the country and the Constitution have been screaming for that one for years. But our illustrious politicians have to do what's in their nature, make every decision a political one. Now, about the economy, I'm not an economist, not even a very good student of things economic, but I think I can boil the problem down to one word: greed. It seems there are always people for whom living comfortably is not enough. It's not enough to own a home, even a vacation home, or cars, or boats, put the kids through college, be able to retire, travel, play golf. Some people need to own everything, control everything. Life becomes a monopoly game. There's only one problem with this approach. No one wins this game. Or let me rephrase that. Once you do win a monopoly game, what do you have? Game over. No more players. And now what do you do? No matter what issue I examine, it always seems to boil down to politicians playing games with people's lives. I was struck by a comment of yours the other night that Ben Bernanke's voice is like Cindy McCain's eyes, lifeless. I think that's a key. It is in the nature of politicians to play games. By politicians, by the way, I mean all those who are involved in government activities, whether elected or appointed. These creatures revel in strategy, tactics, winning, losing, oh, and of course, greed. But they're clueless about life. Now, I'm sure there are some who began political careers wanting to be public servants. There are probably even a few who managed to hold that frame of mind during their careers. Perhaps Barack Obama fits in this category. The jury is still out on him for me. But the bottom line is that whenever we entrust our lives, our liberty, or our pursuit of happiness to politicians, we get screwed because it's in their nature. I'm not sure I'm up for helping any politician across the river for a while. If they want us to stop whining, maybe they should learn to swim. Bridget. Another episode from Bridget's Talking Stick Circle. And if you would like to know what a talking stick circle is, one word for you, truth seeker: Google. All right. Marge is calling from Indiana. Marge, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Michael.
Hi, Marge.
It seems that Professor Peter was right.
Professor Peter?
You remember Professor Peter, don't you? It's been a few years since he wrote his book.
Oh, the Peter Principle.
Yeah.
Oh, that one, yeah.
That one.
All right.
You know, especially when it applies to our government and the folks that's supposed to be corporate-minded and run business and like that.
Now, let's see. People rise to
their level of their
incompetence and stay there.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
There was something that I remember a term from the book, a lateral arabesque. They may go sideways, but they don't seem to go any farther up.
Yeah, that's true. But they also have kind of a clogging effect.
Oh.
Because people who are much superior to them in decision-making and ability and intelligence are stuck beneath them.
Yeah, lest I forget, you were talking about cancer treatment before and not having anything new. There was just something in recent weeks, a couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
I think one of the teaching hospitals in and around Chicago somewhere, I don't know if it's, I'm calling it by its proper name, but cryogenic something, it freezes the cancer.
Right. It's my understanding that's not necessarily a new technique, although there may, or a new idea, there may be a new technique.
I don't know necessarily whether it can be used on all types of cancer,
right.
But I think the one they were talking about in this instance had to do with throat or esophageal or something or other,
mm-hmm.
and the healing time is much more rapid. I mean,
sure. I hope that proves to be an avenue that will help so many people who have that particular sort of cancer. It's my understanding, in addition to that, that the key to this, because cancer is a collective term. It's not, it's not a simple or a single malady. It's a collective term, and the idea seems to be that it can only be attacked, this thing called cancer, on a subcellular or genetic or
makes sense.
Level, right?
It spreads throughout the body without a whole lot of prodding or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing seems to get in its way once it gets started. Something I was going to ask you. Are there a lot of patriotic types that you know of? They have need at NASA down at Houston. I heard announced on the radio today.
Mm. Patriotic types that I know?
Well, they need a few people to pee in a cup.
Right, now hold on.
All right.
I got to do a break, and when I come back, we're not going to have very much time, Marge, but I want you to tell us why they have to pee in a cup. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Right through the final mission in the Japanese skies, and I set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw their cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leader's screaming when they close the missile plants. United fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I...
Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered, Billy Foster, who directed, technically, Ben Birch, who managed the podcast, Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Catherine Bay, the executive producer. Now, let's get back to Marge in Indiana. I can't wait to hear why. Now, who is it? NASA wants people to come and pee in a cup?
Yeah, they're going to need quite a few, I would imagine, or some mighty healthy folks. It seems like they need 80 gallons of urine. Now, I don't know if that's a week or a day or however often they need it, to test the new spacesuits.
Go ahead.
That's all there is.
To test the new spacesuit?
Well, that's what the report said.
Are they going to soak it in the urine? Or
beat the hell out of me. But that's what they want.
Marge, have you been into the cooking sherry again?
Honest Injun. It's been hot around here, but I haven't been drinking anything lately.
Yeah, so 50, give or take a few gallons of urine to test new spacesuits.
Isn't that exciting?
There's got to be more to the story.
That's all that was reported. Now, you know, I'll have to do some more research and find out if there's more to it or not.
Well, you need to do a Paul Harvey for us. And now, the rest of the story.
One quick thing before I go. The other night you were talking about FARC, something from Colombia.
Yeah, FARC.
Did you know that there's a website, FARC.com?
I didn't.
It was put together by one Drew Curtis, who's written a book, It's Not News, It's FARC, How Mass Media Tries to Pass Off Crap as News.
A different FARC.
Well, it's spelled the same.
F-A-R-Q?
F-A-R-K.
Different FARC.
Excuse me all the hell.
That's all right. Did you ever watch Saturday Night Live? Remember Emily Latella?
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, FARC and FARC are two different things, apparently. But
is it just Q or Q-U-E?
FARC is F-A-R-C, not Q. F-A-R-C. It's the acronym for the Revolutionary Forces Fighting for Freedom in Colombia. It's F-A-R-C,
oh,
FARC.
Okay. Well, this is F-A-R-K.
Yeah.
And it's .com. So, and it's how mass media tries to pass off crap as news. I mean, we can agree with that, can't we?
I'll have to check that out. FARC with a K.
FARC with a K. So, I'll go back to researching on the urine and see if I can find the rest of the story.
In the meantime, I'll try to get FARC'd.
I beg your pardon?
FARC, F-A-R-K.
That's what you said.
I want to find out about this website.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Marge.
Peace.
All right. Yeah, well, that too. Thank you, Marge. I appreciate it. Got to watch her. Oh, my God. We really do. Jeff is calling from Arkansas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Jeff, welcome to the program. And I'm sorry, but we only have about 2 minutes here.
Okay, I just want to make it quick. Mr. Mallory, I listen to your show all the time. I am a conservative. But what you stated about the politicians, you touched my heart because you didn't go Republican or Democrat. You generalized as politicians, and, buddy, you were right on the head. And I appreciate that. That's all I wanted to say was compliment you on that.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you checking in. Appreciate you checking in.
He listens to the Mike Mallory Show all the time.
Well, that's good. I like that program too. Justine writes in, "Hey, Mike, you no doubt." This is regarding the CNN reporters. We had that little story, that little snippet of the CNN reporter who's on the no-fly list because he was, in his opinion, it's because he was reporting on the TSA in a not positive way. Justine writes, "Mike, you no doubt already are aware of this, but CNN, I mean, oops, Bush Bin Laden's water carrier, John Roberts, didn't bother to correct that guy paying for the flaming Twin Towers billboard when he said that Clinton was president on 9/11. No, I missed that one, Justine. I've seen an internet a picture of that billboard, which I'd like to find that guy and punch his lights out, frankly. I hate people who do that kind of stuff. But apparently John Roberts, according to Justine, interviewed this freak. And when the freak said that Clinton was president on 9/11, John Roberts just, you know, picked another booger out of his nose and took another look at who's his co-host? What's that woman's name? You don't know? I don't know either. Anyway, Justine says, "I guess Roberts wasn't clear which September 11th the guy was talking about. Are they effing kidding?" Just no, they're really not, Justine. But you know, this is what we have to deal with. This is what we have to deal with. Listen, I haven't talked about this a lot lately, but if you're not a Nova M founding member, you might want to go to NovaMradio.com. And see, I'm just filling in time here. We only have about 45 seconds left, and I know there are people holding on, but we're not going to get to you tonight. It just wouldn't be fair. But it's a good opportunity for me to remind you that you can become a Nova M founding member still. And there are some nice things that go along with that, not the least of which is the video that I've been posting about one a week now, reading in an uncensored way, kind of like Howard Stern on Sirius, in an uncensored way, some of the emails that we get here that, you know, are negative and real name-calling crap, but what the hell, you know. It's a lot of fun, especially when we consider how misspelled everything is. What's so hard about spelling son of a bitch? I don't get that. You know, S-O-N-O-F-A-B-I-T-C-H. Why is that difficult? But it's you know, it's for the Nova M founding members. It's our way of it's our way of doing something to you because you were kind enough to become a founding member. But you might want to join. And also, don't forget, August 16th in Seattle, the big gig that KPTK is doing. Man, that's going to be a blowout. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.